sinners, choosers, lovers, dreamers, hypocrites, cynical bastards, and all my preacher's kids or people who are not related to preachers at all, welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Thanks for tuning in this week. Once again, we have a great episode for you. This is the show where we talk about whatever religious stuff we had growing up. We talk about whatever stuff we got going on now. Boy, what a great episode for talking about the stuff we grew up than with none other than fellow preacher's kid, fellow comedian, Kimberly Clark. Kimberly is a stand-up comic. I've known her out here for a while in LA, but she's a great comic. She's been on Lopez Tonight. You can find her podcast called The Goose Down, which I'm going to have links to in the show notes. You should definitely check out. And again, what a treat to have a fellow preacher's kid to kind of get into the minutia and how that's affected our current spiritual paths, whatever those are. And thanks for Kimberly to coming out and being honest and opening up. And I hope you guys like this episode. Check out Kimberly Clark's stuff. If you like this show, you can go to chooseyourownreligion.com, like the Facebook page, Stitcher, iTunes, all that stuff. If you feel like leaving a rating or review, that'd be cool. Or send me an email at jojoquint.net. I love hearing from you guys. That's it. Please, everyone, settle down. Find your favorite pew. Give it up for Kimberly Clark.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
I don't know. We'll just
just shoot the crap.
We'll just shoot in the crap. Yeah.
Are you going to like edit this? Or?
Yeah, I always do a formal intro like myself before this, so I can plug whatever. I mean, if you have anything you want to plug right now, right off the top.
Dang. Yeah. I mean, check out this podcast I do with comedian Jasper Ray called The Goose Down.
Oh yeah.
We haven't really like done traditional episodes as we've done in previous couple of years that we've been on it, but we've been doing like our individual clips of like comedy, like he does jazz talk, and I've just been putting out little workout I call it the workouts, which are like little clips of my stand-up when I'm doing little small intimate shows and things like that, so it's fun. And I call it the workouts.
Gotcha. And the whole thing is called Goose Down, right?
The Goose Down.
That's cool.
It's on SoundCloud, it's on iTunes as well.
I'll have to check that out. I was about to say I'm a big jazz person, but that's probably like a more like a jazz poser thing to say for me. Like, I took an intro to jazz class in college and undergrad. Mm. I love Miles Davis. Like, I love the great, like, just the stereotypical, like the Beatles of the jazz world. Like, that's my extent. I'm not one of these guys who can like list off like 50 names of like
say
trombone
obscure
players.
Yeah.
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 Jazz people love jazz history, I've noticed.
Yeah, I have to say that I do. I'm into jazz.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I have to say that I do. And I did take like a jazz class in college already with knowledge. So like, I used to sit in the front and like raise my hand like a little dork.
That's awesome.
I enjoyed it. I had a crush on the teacher who was like an ex like jazz drummer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was fine. He was old, but fine.
I get those like like as an excellent jazz musician just has that vibe about them.
Total energy.
It's like a freedom because they're so used to just playing like loose and like whatever.
Yeah, he even did like a demo like performance for us on drums, which was pretty dope.
Wait, were you always into jazz like your whole life?
I would have to say yeah, because well, from like a very early age, you know, because that's a very sophisticated type of music for kids, right? Jazz. I have this bit about like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and how he like plays jazz music, and I'm like, kids don't understand that music.
That's,
you know,
not
what I mean,
kids music at all.
It's not. It's no. Like, this is too like highbrow for a 5-year-old.
It's honestly not most adults music nowadays, even, you know.
It really isn't, but
it bums me out that it's not.
It should be,
right?
Because it's like original American music.
Exactly. It's one of the few that is purely like an American. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Europeans appreciate it more than we do. And it's our stuff.
That's probably true. I feel like it was bigger too, like in the 50s, 60s.
Right. Because all those musicians used to go to Europe because, you know, a lot of them are African American. They were more respected in Europe, treated better. So, you know.
Totally. I was, have you read or I listened to Miles's autobiography on audio tape. Have you read or listened to that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, just the insane racism he had to face, like, his whole career.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you feel, for me, that was the first time I think, I don't know, because I growing up, this is also maybe weird territory, but like growing up through like high school, middle school, I've read plenty of like, you know, things from slavery, things about civil rights movements, but I think they were always from like more of a peaceful, pacifist, activist sort of standpoint. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Miles was like the first one that I felt like I could connect with somebody's anger.
Right.
You know, like it's like a really righteous anger that kind of permeated through his career.
Yeah.
Maybe made him like, unfortunately, when you combine that with like heroin and shit, that maybe made him go off the kind of not be a great person.
Not the most productive type of combination. But I mean, I think it's good that he was angry and that he showed it and voiced it.
Totally. And, yeah. You know, and he made some fucking amazing music, too.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Did you see the Don Cheadle, Miles Davis? What did you think of that?
I thought it captured his essence accurately.
That's a good way to say it.
I thought it was weird just the choice to only focus on that part of his life, like the fusion era, like his whole being holed up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's the most interesting part of his life, maybe to film in terms of like that he was just holed up in his apartment, like driving his Ferrari around, stealing shit, like it was really crazy behavior, but also like a mad genius thing. But I don't know. I guess I was expecting more of like the pure, like straight through narrative.
I was too.
Of his whole like.
I was a little taken aback by how they approached it.
Yeah, but I did like how they like portrayed his relationship with Frances, like his wife.
Ex-wife. Yeah.
Like that was it was very, very good. So, but
you should read the books. Like the autobiographies and stuff. Well, you said you read one.
I listened to the audio version of it.
Okay, yeah.
Which I don't know. There's a really great voice actor on that, but it was every now and then you're stopping to be like, he is like, this is fake Miles Davis.
He was doing Miles' voice.
Yeah, he had like the gruffy accent.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, this motherfucker, you can play like a motherfucker. Like that type of thing. And you're like, well, that's not, but like you forget that it's an actor.
Right, right.
But so you took a jazz class in college.
I did.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Of course I got an A in it.
Of course.
You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you study music in college or was it just like a side course?
It was just a side course. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always played instruments like in elementary, junior high school, high school. But
gotcha.
Kind of put the instruments down once I hit college.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I was forced to play piano through like elementary school.
You were forced.
Yeah, my mom like made me play it. And then she said, okay, once you hit sixth grade, you can choose not to play it. And I stopped.
Right.
Immediately regretted it like a couple years later in high school when like it would have been great to have like for like a flirting standpoint to have like piano game.
Chicks love piano players.
I know, but fifth grade me didn't have the foresight. He's like, no, practicing sucks. I'm just going to give this up. Then I get to high school. Ben Folds is huge with like every girl I have a crush on. I'm like, damn it. It's the worst.
That could have been you.
Could have been me.
Joe Folds.
Joe Folds 10 or whatever. so when you, so you're growing up, you were also, as we talked about, and I messaged you beforehand, because we've hung out at open mics a little bit here and there over the years, mostly Tribal Cafe. I feel like. Glorious.
Back in the day, it seems like. Yeah. I haven't seen you in like a while. Like,
yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
I pop in and out to Tribal every now and then, but Tribal in particular, it's just so, sometimes
gets you down.
It gets me down. I know it doesn't have to get me down, but it does get me. It makes me lose confidence in material that I don't think I should lose confidence in.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense to you.
No, totally makes sense.
But I remember from some conversation a long time ago that you were also a pastor's kid.
Yeah.
As I am.
Mm-hmm.
What denomination were you?
The church is called Church of God in Christ. So it was like evangelical type.
Okay.
Church. Well, I shouldn't say evangelical, but more Pentecostal.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's a huge denomination.
Okay. Or the big Pentecostal or the
Church of God in Christ.
Church of God in Christ. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. And you grew up like your whole life, you've been in that?
Yeah.
Was it your dad or your mom that was a pastor?
My dad. Mm-hmm. My dad was a pastor oh, our church, they don't believe in lady pastors.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I was
me and my dad had a huge discussion about that when I was like a kid. Like, yeah. I just could not understand it.
Sure, yeah.
I was trying to go head to head with him on that one.
Yeah, do you remember kind of what he said?
He was like, did Jesus pick any females as disciples? That was his argument.
I mean, factually, that's not incorrect.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to like argue against your dad here on the podcast.
I mean, biblically, he was correct.
Yeah.
But I just still couldn't wrap my mind around it. You know, at the time, it felt unjust to me. Mm-hmm. And it still kind of does. Yeah. You know?
And do you, I guess just to give a better context for this, I know this is like, I don't know how, this is going to be tricky, your personal territory, especially, I don't know, as a PK, like starting this podcast, it was for me too.
Yeah.
So I don't want to like make you like, I don't know.
That's okay. I won't answer something I don't want to answer.
There you go. See, you have stronger boundaries than I do. I'll just be like, whatever. I'll regret it later.
I won't say anything that someone can find and be like, hey, Kim.
You know I don't know about said? That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I just want to know for context. I mean, have you gone to church a lot recently? Are you still kind of a part of that faith congregation?
To be completely honest, I haven't been in a while. Mm-hmm. Due to the fact that I work on Sundays.
Oh, that's a big one. Yeah. Wait, yeah. Did you grow up around here too?
No, I'm from Syracuse, New York.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do work on Sundays, so that kind of
just church in general.
Coming.
Yeah.
Or going, I should say.
Yeah.
I do listen to a lot of like sermons like online and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know?
Who's like one of your go-to guys?
My go-to guys.
Yeah.
I'm scared to say that out loud because then people be like, oh, you listen to him.
Okay.
Well, there's a new guy out named John Gray, Pastor John Gray. I don't know if you heard of him. Mm-mm. But he was part of this like preacher's panel or whatever. But he came out of Joel Osteen's church. He's a junior or senior pastor there or something like that.
So he's got like stage presence probably.
He's very charismatic.
Yeah.
Sometimes that kind of bothers me a little bit because I'm I don't, you know, just tell me what I need to know. I don't need you to be to entertain me. But I think that's part of his personality and part of his ministry being. Cause he likes acting and singing and all that stuff too. And he said that,
There's like a perfect level of charisma that we want from a pastor. I
don't go Little Richard on me. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Like, yeah. Wait, have you ever seen, there's a documentary called Marjo out there?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I'm going to plug this for everybody listening to this. You can find it, I think on YouTube is where I found it. Maybe on Netflix or something like that. Anyway, Marjo is about this crazy documentary was made in like 1973 about this kid. He was a white Pentecostal kid, but he was the youngest evangelical preacher like ever. He's like he was like an evangelical preacher at like 4 years old.
Wow.
Like doing revivals and stuff, like marrying people at like 4 or 5 years old.
Huh.
Partly because, I mean, the sad part is that his parents like obviously put him up to this and sort of like made him do this. But then throughout the course of that, then he eventually loses his faith, but he's like so good at it that he kind of keeps doing it. And then he finally goes on this final tour, and that's what the documentary follows, him on his final tour, a mix of him doing like revival tent stuff and then behind the scenes interviews where he's like talking about being Mick Jagger and stuff.
What?
And like, it's insane.
And this is a documentary?
It's a documentary. Yeah, it's called Marjo, which is Marjoe.
I have to watch this.
Yeah, it's like, it's, and he's like, now I think he's still alive. He doesn't really do anything with that anymore, but like, he was like an actor. He's like halfway between an actor and that.
Mm-hmm.
But the charisma made me think of that.
Yeah.
Like he was like able to put on this huge performance that really worked in the 70s. I don't think it would work today because it's just like, it's just a bit much.
A little too over the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't want to be sold to.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
We want the truth of whatever we're following or whatever we're listening to kind of speak for itself.
Yeah. That's how I feel.
Totally. So where was your dad on that? Did your dad have a lot of charisma?
My dad was pretty charismatic. Yeah. My dad played piano too. So.
Oh, yeah.
He was a musician as well. Although.
Double threat.
You're funny. Although when he started pastoring, he wasn't playing as much, but occasionally he would get on the piano.
Uh-huh.
His dad was a pastor.
Oh, okay.
So.
Cool.
When his dad was pastoring, he played the piano a lot before he was called to the ministry.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But my dad, my great great granddad was a pastor, and then it skipped a couple of generations.
Oh wow!
And then it hit my dad, and then sometimes I don't know if you feel this way. Sometimes I definitely feel like doing comedy, like doing stand up, is somehow related to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily want to be preaching from stand up, but it's definitely something with that.
I 100% agree with you, and sometimes when I'm doing stand up, I feel like my dad's inflections a little bit and voice a little bit.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah.
Which kind of freaks me out. My sister, one of my sisters is a college professor, and she was telling me the same thing happens to her when she's lecturing. As well. I have actually a sister, another sister and a brother who's actually in the ministry. Like one of my sisters is missionary, and my brother is a minister.
Wow. So it just keeps on going down the line.
Pretty much.
All in the family.
It's deep.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like, well, so it sounds like you have a couple siblings then.
There's three others.
Three others. Mm-hmm. Cool. I have one older sister.
Is she in church?
No. Well, she's like a bartender in Baltimore. I think she might go to church. I haven't really asked her about her current faith practices.
Status.
Yeah, so I can't speak to her any way or another. I mean, because we only get together for like Thanksgiving or Christmas time, basically.
Okay.
And we're like, of course, if we're home, we're going to go to church. So
yeah,
like I can't even now, because like I'm kind of, I guess my parents know I'm not like in the Presbyterian branch. Like I don't necessarily believe and follow the same thing, but I still go to church with them.
Right.
On Sundays, it's a weird dance that we do.
Okay.
But it feels right.
Do they pressure you? Do they like ask you questions?
No, I mean, I think they're really cool about it overall. It was like really kind of a bummer early on, like because it was like I told them before I moved to California, and it was like it's just a very sad moment, and it felt like a you know, it's like a real separation, like the ultimate leaving the nest. It's like I'm not just leaving your nest to California, like physically, I'm gonna like leave like your church nest too.
Right.
But I think. What honestly, even just the fact that I like having a podcast, I think I know they occasionally listen to it. I don't think they listen to it every week, but I think they just like the idea that I'm like in the spiritual, like I'm at least talking about religion.
Talking about it, yeah.
But anyway, what was I saying? Oh, what I wanted to ask you, because there's very few of us out there, I feel like PKs that we meet outside of our siblings.
Right.
Have you met that many outside of your siblings?
Yeah, like I'm actually friends with
a
girl who I went to college with, and she lives out here, and she was a preacher's kid, and she ended up marrying a preacher.
Wow.
Yeah, she married a preacher, so it's interesting, and so she's like, I don't know if they call them first ladies at your church, but
no, I love that, though.
In the black church, well, her church is Baptist, it's not Church of God in Christ, but I think in a lot of African-American denominations and stuff, they refer to the wife of the pastor as the first lady, like the president.
Yeah.
As the first lady. Uh-huh. So she's the first lady of her church. And
that's awesome.
She actually talks to my mom a lot to get advice from her about different things that happen, you know, being in that position.
Yeah. Well, that's because, like, it is like a weirdly, it's a like a very visible, like the family of the pastor.
It's a very visible position
within that church.
It's so funny to me how people want that.
Right?
That's so weird to me. I've met preacher's kids like when I was younger that I felt like they actually got into being like the center of attention like that.
Uh-huh.
And none of us, like me, my siblings, we were just very like low key.
Yeah, me too.
We weren't like flashy.
No.
Let me do this, let me do that. We were just very low key, very, you know, I mean, we were just regular and human.
Yeah.
We were more into like doing well in school and stuff. I think we all genuinely enjoyed church, genuinely enjoyed being part of the congregation and being active, but we weren't like, I'm the preacher's kid.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah.
And there are people out there like that.
That's hilarious. I've never met. No, I'm not. I'm definitely not that way either. I just wanted to like, honestly, I just wanted to like be friends with everybody and like play sports with them.
Yeah, just be regular. Yeah.
I wanted to be funnier and better at sports basically as a kid.
Like, okay.
You know, I didn't want to be known. I didn't want to just have my attention given to me like for no reason.
Yeah. And it was weird, you know, with my situation, because it's like it went down from, you know, other generations, and so it's like the whole city knows our family and knows,
right.
You know, it's just like steeped and deep.
Wait, so were you Syracuse, like the proper, that city?
Yeah.
Okay.
Syracuse, New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know that feeling. Like, I mean, I was in a like tiny town in the Newton, North Carolina.
Wow.
It was like 10,000 people, like 100,000 in the county, maybe.
everybody knew you.
Everybody. Well, yeah, it felt like that a lot of times. Or like all the teachers knew that you're like a PK. It was like, mm-hmm. It was a trip. And I think it was like, I don't know if you've ever had this thought or maybe this never came up for you at all, but I felt like in some ways it set me up in a weird way, especially like moving to Los Angeles, getting started in comedy, where you have to like earn your attention and, you know, you actually have to earn it by merit of like getting better and getting a stronger comic.
Right.
Versus like, I think it almost like set me to have different expectations, like unrealistic expectations when you're like, when we moved churches halfway through, high school. And so when I got to new high school, everybody was like, all their moms are told like, be nice to the preacher's kids, like welcome Joe. Like I had like it easy in terms of like making
carpet,
friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Does any of that resonate with you at all? Or is that not really part of your experience?
That was never really part of my experience. I mean, I guess looking back, maybe you know, there might have been people that might have went out of their way for me because I was Elder Clark's daughter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Well, it was always the weird thing when somebody called you by first name, like, oh, there's Joe, and you don't know who they are. Like,
who they are.
At
that's
all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That still happens when I go back home.
Yeah, me too.
And I have to play it off or
I know.
Whisper to like one of my siblings, who is that? Or, you know.
You know what? It's never dishonest to say it's good to see you.
Yeah,
it doesn't,
I do that.
It doesn't mean that I have to, like, I know everything about them.
Right.
But it's like, I do, most of the time it is somebody I recognize.
Yeah.
It's just hard to, like, combine a lot of faces now, especially now that I haven't been back to that church in almost 10 years, like, as a regular member, like, since high school. So it's like, you know, you just remember, obviously outside of, like, the people who are actually family friends of ours, there's some people who just, you hear the names, like, talking to your parents, like, oh, so-and-so's in the hospital, so-and-so's,
right.
Like, got married.
Hospital talk.
Oh,
woo.
Yeah, right?
I hear that a lot. A
lot of hospital talk.
Yeah, who died and all that kind
of
stuff.
Well, that's one of the coolest things I think about, you know, looking at my own dad's career. I don't know how much your dad was like this. Just you do kind of like, as a pastor, you get to play, if you're doing it, I think, as, I don't know, there's no perfect right way to do it.
Right.
But like, if you're doing it, I think I'll just say the way my dad did it. I'm so like careful of like, I don't want to say any shoulds or any rights or wrongs of how to do
anything. Yeah, because it's relative.
Right. But like, I love the idea that you can have a week of like, you're visiting people in the hospital as part of your job. You're like comforting people as part of your job. And then you're writing a sermon. You're writing a new 15.
New 15 minutes.
Right. Every week with no pressure to actually put in punchlines. And then whatever things you do put in, people will just eat up.
Right.
Like a church laugh.
Right, right.
Not that hard to get a church laugh.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're not.
And then everybody's so grateful for any kind of joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of humorous things happen at the church I grew up in.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, people get really, because it's Pentecostal, you know, people get excited and they start.
Oh, yeah.
Super you've seen it. You're from the Carolina. You're from the South. So I know you've seen this.
Oh, I've seen it. Yeah.
And a lot of humor can ensue during those moments.
Yeah. Well, like, in humor where it's, like, it's almost, like, the more reverent it should be.
Right.
The primer, the opportunity.
Yeah.
Wait, would you, like,
rough moments.
When you, growing up, did you ever transition from, like, sitting with family to then sitting with your girls? Like, your crew?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I always had to sit with my mom. I was the youngest.
Okay.
So I always had to sit next to her.
Oh,
and
that's
I
so sad.
Detested it. And then as I got a little bit older, I had these two friends named Tanya and Sonia.
Uh-huh.
And so funny, they were twins. And one
Perfect.
Of them used
of course
to
they're
like
twins.
Rock. They both actually used to rock back and forth like this. I don't know if it was a nervous tick or what it was, but they used to rock and bump their heads on the not their head, but their backs against the wooden
pew.
Bench, the pew. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I think it was something to like calm them or whatever. They used to do that. Nice to sit back there with them. But I used to really get into some devilment sitting with them. Because, you know, we were just talking and,
oh, yeah,
you know, playing and whatnot. And
oh, me too.
My dad actually, there were times when he would reprimand me in the middle of the sermon. And
oh, that's
so
hilarious.
That was like the, I was always like completely mortified over that happening. So
Kimberly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn. Wait, how loud were you being? Were you being pretty boisterous? Being
I don't know what I was doing particularly. I just remember him telling me to stop over the pulpit. And it's just like, you know, it's like reading a scripture and then looking up and being like, Kimberly?
I definitely remember cutting up a lot. Lots of whispering.
Yeah.
Lots of traded, like, doodles. And
writing notes.
Writing and notes, making jokes.
Eating candy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I also remember, too, like, I think middle school it was. It's when I started, like, I haven't pulled that many all-nighters in my life. Mm-hmm. The most I did was in, like, middle school playing video games, like, that type of thing. Like, I just, like, would stay up all night playing some dumb thing on PC. And then, like, I'd get into church, and, like, I would be falling asleep all the time in the middle of church. And there would be, I remember there was, like, a couple weeks in particular where my head would, like, snap back and hit the pew, and there'd just be a loud smack of my head on the wood. And, of course, everybody in the congregation saw me. And my mom was so embarrassed. She's just, like, feeding me gum, like, just to try to give me something to stay awake.
That's sad, Joe.
I know. I was a disruptive little kid.
My mother, I used to sing in the choir. That's another thing that transitioned me from sitting next to my mother was when I was old enough to sing in, like, the junior choir. I didn't have to sit next to her.
Uh-huh.
But I was in the front, and I had this penchant for, like, having my legs open with a skirt on. And my mother used to always do the little close your legs sign with her hands. She'd be clasping her hands together, like, close your legs.
Uh-huh. I can just see my mom. Yeah. My mom had so much shit like that. The little hidden mom, like the stuff.
Little sick signs and gestures.
Like, yeah, I would be like picking at my like fingernails or something, and she'd always like, stop it. She probably still does that too, if I'm being honest. But
yeah.
And so you're at the same church the whole time.
Yeah, the whole time.
And you were
whole time.
So you grew up with like your kids in the youth group.
Yeah, a lot of them are gone. Mm-hmm. You know, like
passed away or just gone?
No, just gone, like to different cities or, you know, they're not really there anymore, don't attend.
Yeah.
So
same with mine. It's
I think it's a sign of the times.
Yeah. Why do you think it is that a lot of people our generation aren't religious anymore, even the people that grew up because I grew up with plenty of religious people and kids my age, kids our age, and I think some of them still go, but I know a lot of them don't.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like with the information age, maybe there's something to that.
Yeah.
Let my boyfriend tell it. He'd be like, it's the age of Aquarius. You know, like people are awakened. And, you know, I think the unfortunate thing, too, about a lot of churches is the fact that, you know, I don't know. I feel like churches get a bad rap in terms of, you know, things that happen. When at the end of the day, it's like you have to understand that whoever's pastoring a church or whoever is over it or whatever happens in a church, these are human beings.
Humans, exactly.
You know, it's just because you're in the church doesn't mean that you're perfect. Even if you're preaching, you know, to help people. That's why I always, you know, and my dad, by any means, was not perfect, and he, you know, if he could get out of the grave and tell you, he would be like, I was not a perfect man, but he would always say, follow me as I follow Christ. And I always admired him for always saying that and, you know, really repeating that over and over to the congregation, because it's so, you know, true of everyone, of Jesus himself,
right? Definitely. Well, and like that's sort of like it's almost similar to like we forgive. I agree with so much of what you're saying. I think, a lot of churches, you get blamed by association with just, like, churches where some really gnarly shit actually goes down or some really hateful rhetoric comes out. And so then they get lumped by people who aren't in the church at all, who were, like, grew up atheists, grew up completely outside of that. They just, it's hard not to just associate it all together.
Right.
So that, I think that's one problem. But then, too, it is the humanity. There's always going to be a humanity in the pastors, and I think the best ones are able to, and I think my dad was pretty good at this, at just like admitting your own faults, not right. acting like you're some like enlightened, like saintly being.
Right.
And then you can actually connect to people better with that.
Exactly.
Versus pretending to be something you're not. I guess that is an issue too. A lot of pastors build this cult of personality mm-hmm. into something they're not.
Mm-hmm. They start believing it themselves even.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Well, it's like we forgive artists, right? We tend to forgive artists for most things if they're like creative geniuses. Like we'll forgive
like
Kanye.
R. Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. People will forgive R. Kelly for all that shit.
Yeah. They saw the video of him peeing on a little girl and then they're up and dancing to
they're still ignition. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the difference is they're not, you know, a lot of them aren't trying to say that they're some like messenger of God.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm sorry to hear that. Apparently your father passed away.
He did in 2015, like in January. Man. So it's still kind of fresh.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm handling it a lot better.
Yeah. Was he still the pastor when he was when he passed, or?
He was, but he wasn't active. He mm-hmm. wasn't active for a good. It was over a year
gotcha.
Where he wasn't really able to pastor and really be active. I mean, he would attend when he
right.
could, but it was...
So it wasn't like an completely out of the blue thing. It
was, no, yeah. He was ailing for a while.
I'm
so,
sorry to hear that.
You know, it was kind of, you know, it's funny because they say, oh, well, you know, I don't know. I felt like, okay, I have time to prepare for this. But then when it happened, it still was like devastating, you know, because I was like,
yeah.
gosh, I had all this time. And then, you know, I kind of felt like through his illness, I was mourning through that. And I was like, okay, at least I'm getting all this mourning out now. But then when he actually left, you know,
it's like a final,
like another set of, you know,
yeah.
that.
I can only imagine. I mean, my sister went through cancer. She luckily survived, but
wow,
it is even just going through that. And that was 5 years ago. So luckily she's been in remission the whole time. But
that's great.
It is. It's so weird to brush even vicariously through someone you love, just have that like brush with death or just experience that.
Mm-hmm.
that truth of life
mm-hmm.
firsthand, and no matter how much we intellectually understand it, it's just so visceral. I can only imagine, especially like, you know, the patriarch of your family, right?
Yeah, the patriarch of our family. He was like a dad to a lot of people that didn't have fathers.
Absolutely.
Too, you know,
I can bet. Yeah.
But it's funny, I've had a couple dreams about him since he's been gone. A lot of I want to say, like, some of the dreams felt like visits almost, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
just weird. My dad didn't like to fly. He liked to take the train.
Uh-huh.
Like, he would take the train cross country or the bus.
Uh-huh. But not fly. He just hated flying.
No flying.
Yeah.
And he was
that.
In the Air Force. But after he got the Air Force, he's like, I'm not getting on these.
Fuck this. I've had
anymore.
My fill of planes.
Yeah.
I'm good.
So he likes to take his time and ride and whatnot. But I had this, the last dream I had with him, we were like on a bus together. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me his back hurt or something like that. And I was like, oh, your back hurts? And he just nodded his head, yes. And I was like, oh. And I was like, you should drink more water then. You know, or I was like,
yeah.
Because I was always telling him, you know, how to take care of himself. And, you
uh-huh.
know, he used to say, Kimberly always fusses at me because, you know, his diet was horrible. And, you know, he's all about meat.
Uh-huh. Hey, I love meat.
Yeah.
I don't
but
see anything wrong
you
got
to break it up with some vegetables sometimes and some water. And, you know.
Kimberly, I didn't come here to be told what and what I can't eat.
Yeah, he's like, Kimberly fusses at me. And, you know, he didn't like come to L.A. He liked to go to San Francisco. And so I would meet up with him sometimes in San Francisco. And I remember he was like, let's order some food. I was like, okay. And I find this place and it's like wraps and smoothies
uh-huh.
and stuff. So I ordered like a kale smoothie and I really had him drinking it. And he told my mother, he's like, Kimberly's got me drinking this green stuff. That's what he called it, green stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's, I mean, do you feel like you still I mean, whether it's through dream form or, I don't know, do you feel like you still turn to what he would say for advice now or for in certain situations, or is it?
Yeah, sometimes when I'm talking to people, I feel like, because this is another thing too, like sometimes my dad would give people rides after church that didn't have mm-hmm. cars and stuff, and they'll talk about their problems with him while I was in the back seat and I was a kid.
Huh.
So I've listened to several counseling sessions with my dad and parishioners.
That's fascinating. It's almost like taxicab confessions.
When I think back on it, I'm like, wow, I was really exposed to like a lot of wisdom.
Yeah.
And then when people ask me things, you know, I find myself when I'm talking to people, you know, I hear him and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so weird. I'm gonna stop talking.
Yeah. Do you think that's had like an effect on like who, like your personality and stuff? Because you're like a pretty mellow person. Like, it doesn't seem like somebody easily rattled by stuff.
Yeah, my dad was real mellow like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he would get upset, but he was just a very even tempered person.
Yeah.
And I think that's from hanging out with him. You know, like I would ride in the car with him a lot, and sometimes we just ride quietly. We wouldn't say anything. And that was totally okay. Like, I'm totally okay with being quiet. That's probably why me and my boyfriend are, like, real cool. Because he doesn't talk a lot sometimes.
Sure,
and I'm okay. Well, a lot of times. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And, like, you know.
It's compatible.
I'm just comfortable in that environment. And
like,
I think
silence
that has a,
and stillness.
Yeah. That's okay with me. Like, that feels good, actually.
I love stillness.
Me too.
I think that's something, I don't know if it's a church thing or if it's just, or what it is, but I think, there's a pastor called Reverend Ed Bacon, who was preaching at the Episcopalian Church up in Pasadena for a long time. He just retired, but he has a book called The Eight Habits of Love, which are just trying to generalize across all religious faiths, like how do we manifest love in our lives? And one of those is stillness. It's just like seeking what you don't have to. He's like, it can be prayer or meditation, or it can be like listening to music. I mean, it can be whatever your version of stillness is, seeking that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's so crucial to me.
Yeah. And I'm okay with like my dad, sometimes my mom would go with him on the cross country trips, but he would go a lot by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Spain by myself, you know,
wow,
some years ago.
Yeah.
And that was an awesome trip.
I bet. I love going to concerts by myself sometimes.
Yeah.
Like movies. I haven't been to a movie by myself in a while, but
I like
the solo experience.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I have like a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm cool with it.
But at the same time, like hearing your stories of your dad, just, I mean, I feel like my dad was the same way, just very service oriented, very community oriented. And I think that's what we forget too. Like, that's what like pastors are. They really are community builders.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like, it's such a cool thing that, I don't know, I wish I could do, like, I wish I could just do that more naturally and more just like bring that into my own life, you know?
In the capacity of what you're doing right now?
Yeah, just like being more generally help, like just so, I don't know, just the idea of like giving people rides to places.
right.
Or just,
right.
I don't know, wishing I could be more of like a confident, maybe it like helps that being in the pastor role, it's
right.
like expected that he's going to be like kind of in a therapist type situation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Wait, have you ever thought about going into the preacherhood?
Mm-mm.
Never?
You know what is
not even once.
Maybe when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
But I had an uncle at the funeral who, you know how people say, you know, I see this in your life, God revealed it to me type thing. And he was saying he watched me on George Lopez or whatever. And he was like, and I saw ministry, you know, is what he said.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, maybe it is in a sense, you know, but
sure, yeah.
Maybe not in the traditional sense. But I think he was looking at it more in the traditional sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, yeah, we're like, we can see the metaphor of like ministry can be anything. You can have the ministry of being a little league coach. You can have the ministry.
That's
of,
how I see it, you know. I mean,
but he was like, no, I literally see you as a pastor.
I feel like he was in some way saying that.
It's like,
maybe.
Hey, there's always that option.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody looks at me like I'm a heathen child anyways. I don't think everybody, but there's some people in the family.
Do they?
It's kind of like, you're in LA being wild, twerking.
Is that what they think?
No one said that to me to my face. Yeah. But you know how you feel the vibe. Like, uh-huh. What are you doing out there? You
know,
smoking that funny stuff.
Uh-huh.
My dad called it wacky weed.
Wacky weed.
He had me roll. That was one of the funniest things he said to me before he passed
away. That wacky weed.
Yeah, he was like talking about, I forgot who he was talking about. He was like, they're smoking that wacky weed. I was like, oh, snap, dad.
Like, no, dad, it's the good weed.
That's a good one.
There's good weed out there. It's not all wacky.
Wacky weed.
The wacky weed's probably what I had to buy on the East Coast where it's not legal.
Right, you know? Exactly.
That's the real wacky weed.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom always, they lump that into drugs, just in general.
Weed, one, drugs.
Yeah, they never break it down.
Yeah.
They're just like, are you still doing any drugs? I hope you've quit that forever.
Hilarious.
I'm like, yeah, sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. How do they feel about that? So you're really open with your parents. Like, you tell
them
everything.
I try to be. Well,
congratulations.
I'm not always, though. I mean, I guess if they ask, I tell. They
okay.
They often don't ask, but I think... I told them before I moved to LA that I was like not really believe in the same God that they did,
mm-hmm.
just because I felt like it was important to get that out of the way before, so they know LA didn't change me and that
right.
this is like a natural thing. It didn't have to do with any of that or whatever. But I don't know. I just feel any level of honesty I aspire to feels like I always feel very afraid.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm trying to breach to a new level of it,
mm-hmm.
but it always feels good in the end, and I've never really regretted being more honest.
Wow.
I've gotten into some, you know, it leads to like some fights sometimes. It leads to like some like short term, maybe sad conversations or
I'm sure
mad stuff, but not in the end. They're very loving and accepting people, and I think we just realize that life goes on, and I'm not just because maybe I smoke weed sometimes or mm-hmm. I don't believe in the same God they do. It doesn't mean I'm not their son. It doesn't mean I don't love them.
Right.
I think it's maybe that's part of, it could be part of what our generation is like. I think a lot of people, our generation, don't like feeling boxed in by one specific religion
mm-hmm.
or one specific way of doing it.
Right.
Now, I'm starting to wonder through doing this podcast that whether I've, like, not this specific podcast, but just the podcast in general.
Okay.
Like, sometimes I wonder if, like, it's even possible to do religion a la carte. Like, if can you, like, pick and choose, or do you have to commit to one thing?
You know what? I was talking to someone who's, like, a very fundamentalist, like, she was raised in church, God in Christ and all that stuff, and she's talking about this guy that she was dating, and she was like, he's just made up his own religion, you know, and uh-huh. she was really disgusted by this. And you know, I was listening, I didn't really voice my opinion out loud to her, but I was thinking to myself, well, we all have like an individual relationship with God,
the divine. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, in a sense, I don't know, like, certain things are going to apply to me because it's me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
I think everybody's situation is unique. And I think for us to completely turn a blind eye to that and
yeah.
overlook that is being unrealistic.
I think it's unrealistic. And I don't think even a church, even people in the same church, same congregation, I don't think they want it to be completely homogenous, you know?
Yeah.
That makes it boring.
It can't be. And you know what? It's not being real.
Yeah.
You're not being real if it's mm-hmm. homogenous.
And it's, I think it prevents, you know, I think at its best, the church is it's an evolving institution. It grows with the times and mm-hmm. it keeps up with modern life. And so it keeps being a relevant ministry
mm-hmm.
to bring back that word, now I mean the metaphorical one, not the literal one.
Okay.
Version of as a relevant ministry to its people, of like saying like, yeah, we're, I mean, that the lame versions of that is when you see churches like trying too hard to be into like technology and stuff, like, oh, we have a Snapchat now.
Yeah,
like I don't mean that stuff.
No,
we can leave that behind.
Yeah, please.
But the, I don't know, I feel very passionate about things like LGBT acceptance in the church
mm-hmm.
and like women pastors in general. The Presbyterians have had women for a long time being pastors, and was always baffling to me, the churches that didn't have that. Still kind of is baffling.
Yeah. Even as a child, like I said,
yeah.
Like I just didn't understand that and couldn't wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
And I still can't.
Yeah, and did he feel that way till the end?
I think pretty much he did. He did. He was definitely a fundamentalist, you know, but, mm-hmm. you know,
as it's good
we agreed
bad.
To disagree, yeah. you know, and I loved him just the same and never despised yeah. him for feeling that way.
Exactly. Well, and then that, just as we were talking about, it's that healthy disagreement that leads to ultimate growth for both of y'all.
Right. It's about coexisting, and people don't understand that. You know, I get so angry because it's like you have the atheists on one side, you know, blaring away, and then you have the fundamentalist on the other side blaring away, and people can't see themselves in each other's side.
Yep.
It's like you guys are it's the same side of, or you know, different sides of the same coin.
Kimberly, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's honestly, to get meta again about this podcast in general, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it, because I knew a lot of comics were like kind of have an atheist bent in general. But I also know so many great Christians and I know there's some I've met and talked to like Christians in the comedy community, and it's like mm-hmm. just very hard. Because they are so diametrically opposed and there's a lot of anger at the other side.
It's almost like a political attachment to it as well. Because
yeah.
I think people, if you identify as being a Christian, they just automatically think politically you mm-hmm. have right-wing views and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, it's funny because a comic got up once, it was open mic or something, and just going all atheist and whatnot.
Sure.
And I was like,
yeah.
It's really trendy. You know, and I got up and I was like, you know, it's really trendy to be atheist now, isn't it? It's really trendy to say you don't like Jesus.
Yeah.
And I just think that's really hack of you to say that.
Yes.
It's very hack. You know what I mean?
Oh, it is. Yeah.
I don't know.
No,
I just feel like people say they say it and don't, you know, they don't. They're not real atheists.
Well, it's like, and they feel like it's a, I don't know. There's like a, I think spiritual pride is a problem for people in general.
Yeah.
And you see that's a kind of, that's the spiritual
pride.
On both sides, absolutely. And that's the spiritual pride of atheists. I know plenty of atheists who have no need to talk about it.
Right.
They don't need to shit on religion.
There it goes.
And publicly. They may even internally think like it's stupid.
Yes.
But they don't have, like, I know so many, they're like, no, that's like, why would I talk about it?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. That's, oh my God.
And yeah. And that's like
what that really resonated with me. With
yeah. Well, and that's what I love too about, like, that's one of Jesus's main preachings is like, really the worst thing you can do is have spiritual pride, like the blaspheming.
Right.
To claim to be righteous and holy.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like that was one of the, to me, when I, my version of reading, I don't know how I read the Bible now, how I, because I still look up to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think as a lot of non-Christians look up to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and I think, he was just saying, I think his main message was like, he's coming into the religious establishment saying like, it's fine to follow a religion, but mm-hmm. these Pharisees they think they're missing the forest for the trees.
Exactly.
And it's that uppity bullshit. That I don't have any time for.
Exactly.
You know?
That's why I'm so cool with, like, listening to people with opposing views. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I think that wherever you land on the side of religion or you don't have anything, I think it's good to open yourself up and listen to people that have different beliefs.
Totally.
I mean.
And in terms of stand-up, too, I'm curious. Have you talked about much about your own beliefs on stage?
Not really.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough.
Not really. I mean, I talk about, like, you know, have I mentioned that my dad's a pastor? Not really.
Me either.
I might have in the beginning a little bit, but.
Because, yep. like, when you're first starting out, at least when I was starting out, you're just like, a lot of it's so pure, like, the highlights of your biography, right? Because you're
mm-hmm.
just, like, trying to come up with, like, whatever to write about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right, here's the main stupid bullet, like the superficial bullet points
mm-hmm.
about me, like I have red hair from North Carolina,
right?
I still have jokes about those things, but like those were the first things you start off with, like, yeah, I'm a preacher's kid.
Yeah.
But then, like, especially out here, it wasn't really relevant to my day-to-day life, so
right.
it's like I didn't really write about it or want to talk about it or bring it up.
Right.
Yeah, I think most people don't even know that I'm a bastard's kid.
Right. I mean, it's in my bio, so a lot of people, like, if you come across my bio, you'll see it in there. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I think it's on my website now, too.
Okay.
For the show, yeah.
Okay, cool. But, I mean, other than that, I don't know. I also, too, have a level of reverence for, you know, his ministry and, mm-hmm. you know, just a level of respect for...
Totally.
You know, kind of keeping it... separated, if you say.
Absolutely.
If you will.
No, me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I feel, yeah, it's because even though I feel strongly about my own, I don't know, beliefs and my own journey away from there, but like, I also don't want to, it's like, I feel like I need to be honest in speaking my own journey and my own truth, but I also don't want to unnecessarily involve them either. Like, I don't
exactly.
want to drag them into my drama or anything
right.
like that.
Because it's you. It's not
right.
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally get that.
But we're both just the heathen Los Angeles
well,
kids.
Well, I know the parishioners or maybe the parishioners' kids or whatever. Uh-huh. You know, people have seen me online or whatever, mm-hmm. caught me on TV a couple times, whatever, uh-huh. do my thing. You know, my act is not blue, you know, but maybe I right. might have dropped a couple of unsavory words here and there. You know, it doesn't happen often, but it has. Uh-huh. And, you know,
a damn
whatever.
Or a hell.
Yeah, you know,
Kimberly.
I call it house cussing, but, you know, it's like, you know, I really try to be respectful of that. And of what he built and, you know, of what his father and mother built, you know, because it's definitely.
Yeah. So the family yeah. is still like an important thing to you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, I know that I need to live my truth and be who I am.
Yeah. And I think that's a pastor's kid thing. Ideally, I think there's a lot of bad apples. Sometimes we have a rap like PKs
yeah.
for going the rebellious route.
And you know what? It's not like I set out and was like, okay, I'm going to do the exact opposite that I was taught to do.
Exactly. Me
like,
either.
Those were never my intentions and mm-hmm. they still aren't.
Yeah. I was know? Like, I was so good in high school. Like all the way through high school, I was like a total rules follower.
Right.
I was just like all, and I had a great church experience. I didn't,
mm-hmm,
I wasn't
me too.
Like traumatized by any of that. I wasn't,
me too.
I didn't feel guilty or anything like that about like, other than like the general, like, you know, be a better person in general, but nothing like you're going to hell, God. Like if you don't, I didn't have that kind of baggage.
Well, I have to say though, I mean, my experience, I can't say it was 100% like
mm-hmm.
perfect. Like it was a little polarizing because in the church I grew up with, there were a lot of rules and it was very strict.
Mm.
So from that aspect, you know, I can look back and say, okay, it's had this type of effect on me, mm-hmm. you know. But I feel like I pulled the good out of it and took that with me. You know what I'm saying? Instead of
yeah.
taking those other things that were
yeah.
oppressive and, you know, were
what's like
hindering
what,
me.
What, I totally get that. What do you, what's like an example of something?
Well, so it was a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, I recounted this to, it's funny. I did a show at UCB, Ahmed,
Repentance.
Yeah. I did that show.
Oh, cool.
And, I had recounted the story about how when women would, or young ladies at the church, if they would become pregnant, you know, the pastor, being my dad, would call them up to the front of the church and they basically would have to repent to the congregation. And that was a very traumatic thing
yeah.
to experience as a kid, to see something like that.
That's intense.
Thank God they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But it was happening for a while. I saw it happening for a while. And, you know, just kind of, it affects you.
Yeah.
And just like sexuality things too, like how they mm-hmm. talk about sex and deal with sex, you know.
I did get some of that. Some of that's kind of like hang-ups.
That's,
yeah.
yeah, you know, and that's why you know, hear these stereotypes about PKs and all that stuff is because,
yep.
you know, of all of the repression. Well, just in church, you know, the mm-hmm. Catholic church with
mm-hmm.
the priest and everything, it's because people are not talking about sexuality and being
Absolutely.
Honest about
Absolutely.
This stuff. You wouldn't have mm-hmm. these terrible stories happening.
It's like an to me, I don't know, from an outsider looking at the church, it almost feels like an unnatural suppression. And then,
yeah.
And because it's, I don't know, I feel like the human spirit just reacts naturally to that by wanting to be free.
Yeah.
And wanting to like say like, no, I'm not going to, I can't be confined by this.
Yeah. And it comes out in perverse ways.
Exactly.
At times.
It goes too far the other way.
Yeah.
Because it sets up, I mean, it's like the whole thing. It's like my parents prevented me from watching like MTV when I was a kid.
Okay.
So guess what was the coolest thing to me? MTV.
MTV.
Then it became right. like the holy grail of like television programming.
Right.
For, like,
exactly.
In middle school, I like figured out a way to get around like the parental lock codes to like, so I could watch it, you know, the real yeah. world or whatever. Like, just bad programming.
Mm-hmm.
But it was because it was built up this thing versus like, you know, I knew friends who were like, they were allowed to watch, you know, whatever movie they wanted. And it was like, yeah, whatever. Like it wasn't like a special thing.
Exactly.
To them.
Exactly.
And I totally agree with sexuality. I mean, sexuality was like, we didn't have it, I don't even think, that much relative shame in my church. I mean, it was like no sex until marriage was kind of pushed
right.
upon us and
of course.
Like, things like that. And but overall, it just wasn't really brought up. And then, I mean, of all things, I actually, the past month, I've started like publicly talking about like how I'm kind of into like the BDSM world. Like that's starting to become like
The Sims?
No, oh no, not The Sims.
So, I was about to say that's a little.
No, but like BDSM as in like bondage, like.
Oh, you're into that?
I'm into that stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Bondage, discipline, sadomasochism is like the acronym for it. It's still like weird to talk about, and I don't necessarily. As I was talking about it, I'm finding that middle ground of like, well, this is like a cool, like an interesting thing. And it's something I'm like passionate about that you can do it in a loving way. Even mm-hmm. it's like evil, like heathenistic, mm-hmm. like type stuff. It doesn't have to be this anti-God thing or this anti-spiritual thing.
Right.
I also don't want to like foist it upon like people like to have like who aren't interested in hearing about
right,
it.
Right.
So I don't have to get into details of any of that stuff right now. But I do think in general, yeah, it's, I think there's a. I think the churches in general would be maybe better served to open up even like fun sexuality stuff, you know?
And I think there's some churches that have tried to do that, but yeah. I don't know how that's going.
It's tough.
I don't know how that's going.
I don't know how it's going either. Well, we're about time to close things down. Now, normally this is like the fork in the road where I have an optional, the gimmick of this show
mm-hmm.
is for people who aren't a part of a religion. They can make up a religion. They can invent one. But
is this like your altar call type of thing?
You
need like music.
The worst. I should have some background music for this yeah. section. No, I mean like I have like a list of criteria. People can invent a religion if they want. They can make up one. Or alternatively, and I don't know where you fall on stuff, but you can also, the other version of this is, is there something in the faith that you ascribe to that you would like to heighten or focus on or change, do differently?
Mm-hmm.
So it's your choice.
Something in the faith that I ascribe to that I'm like on board with that I would like for people to focus on, I think, is just love, you know, because I feel like if you truly love people, I know it sounds very generic mm-hmm. to say, but like if you really truly love people, you wouldn't harm them,
you know. I'm on board with that, by the way, because
okay.
this is what I think. It really, it's like so dumb that I think it can be boiled down to love. So
mm-hmm.
many, you know, anytime I have like, I don't know, I've started, whenever I have a decision to make in my mind, I try to think like tie goes to like the loving decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if
yeah.
I'm like struggling between a more selfish action and one
yeah.
that's like giving somebody the benefit of a doubt or things like that. Yeah, I don't know. It's a very, I think in thinking of like own, I've gone through different, like over the years, especially in my 20s, I go through different modes of life of like decision-making, like basing my decisions off of like, I don't know, maximizing my energy or like maximizing my career or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to completely abandon those things, but then I think they can get so complex and so contradictory and all this stuff that having love as just a simple system
yeah.
And that includes self-love and then love for people directly in front of you, love for the world. It just, it really does simplify things. And I think, I don't know, provides a, like a good light.
It can. To your path. I mean, there's somebody that I really don't like. And
what?
I'm sorry.
Kimberly, I hate to say it, but there's people I don't like too.
Yeah. And you know what? I had to, I was like, you know what? There's something in them that's in me that I see.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And I gotta fix that thing. And then I can look at them with loving eyes.
Well, I think that's so true. And I think we see that the people that annoy us the most, it's, or the, especially if we can think, like point out something,
it's in us.
It's usually in us. That's why we're so good at like finding it in, mm-hmm, other people.
Cause we got it.
Yeah. But I think that this is the first step to compassion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that awareness of like, oh, right, we do share this thing. And from that standpoint, even it's so, this is what I love about love, right?
Mm-hmm. What I love about love.
This is what I love about love is that when you, that the very thing that you don't like them for is the gateway to understanding them and loving them, because yep, it's something that is in you too.
Yeah, and that you share.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I love love.
I love love too.
Well, Kimberly, thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much. This is great. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. And that's the show. Once again, thanks so much to Kimberly Clark. Go find the Goose Down podcast. Check out this show. Keep in touch with me. Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher, iTunes, email, whatever. I love you guys. Namaste.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?